Patriots Football Weekly is delivered to you by W.B. Mason, the official office supplier of the New England Patriots. Who but W.B. Mason? Morning Meeting, brought to you by Verizon. Better matters.
Guys, I still cannot believe what I saw Sunday night.
Pretty much exactly what we predicted, right?
Yeah, right.
Mapped
that
it
was
out.
Right there.
PFW, right
25
again.
25-point deficit, overtime, first in history. Yeah,
I called
okay.
it. Yeah. I called it. Are you okay, though? Because Andy was very concerned about you during the game.
Well, you should have been. Because
and fans were on Twitter as well.
I'm in the
What's
press
Fred's
box.
Heart rate?
In the rules of the press box, you can't cheer. You can't. So it's all internalized. And I guess Eric Scalavino was sitting next to me. He said my face was getting redder and redder as the game went on.
But the good news is the team sounds like it was more confident than most fans were. Because a lot of fans on Twitter were, they wanted to jump off the roof like Lady Gaga did. They were not confident. They were feeling bad.
Without a wire, though.
But apparently, Julian Edelman, Daron Harmon, apparently there were guys preaching. Chris Long, I give him credit. He admitted he was doubting what was going on. But these other guys, and he said there were 10, 11, 12 of them, including Bill, saying, we can do this. We just need to start making plays and doing the right thing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, it's not like they couldn't move the ball. They would make mistakes,
yep.
You know, the fumble, the inner pick six from Brady. And we knew the Falcons were going to be able to move the ball. Anyone that thought that the Patriots defense, as good as it is, was going to just shut down the Falcons, you know, that just wasn't realistic.
And certainly in the first half, I thought the speed was what was killing the Patriots offense to some degree. I thought those Falcons defenders, we talked all about it. Falcons aren't a great defense, but they're young, fast, and aggressive.
And if you're going to be up for a game, you're going to rise up for a game. This is the one.
No question. And they were flying all over the field. And it seemed like initially the Patriots were a little caught off guard.
And it was the combination, too, because I think Andy was right. The coverage was much tighter than I was anticipating. I thought we were going to see a ton of wide open guys. And really, we never saw that. Even when the Patriots got going in the fourth quarter, there were some incredible plays that needed to be made in tight coverage. But the pass rush was able to get there, and it was another sort of shaky moment for that offensive line on the big stage. But somehow they put it together when they have to. How many times in that game did you say to yourself, if this play doesn't go the Patriots' way, it's over?
Right.
And obviously every one of them went the Patriots' way.
Yeah, especially, and the one for me was the sequence when Julio Jones makes the catch. They're well within field goal range toward the end. You know, a field goal makes an 11-point game. Pretty much game over.
And it looked like, again, you were going to be victimized by this crazy catch. Now, this one was pure skill. There was no luck involved to it.
Yeah,
he proved
like,
why he's
Manningham's.
One of the best receivers maybe in history when all is said and done with what he's able to do.
So then you have the sack, the holding call, and the punt, and now you're back in it.
Dan Quinn, for the second time, was on a team that didn't run the ball when it probably should have run the ball to beat the Patriots.
I just really feel the way they approached the game down that stretch is he didn't want to be accused of taking his foot off the gas, of playing conservative. And, you know, sometimes you have to play the odds.
Would you rather be called conservative or called a loser?
Well, that's what ultimately happened.
Because now he's a loser.
Right.
That's what happened. They fell.
Yeah. And
they fell apart.
And if there was a team that was going to be able to take advantage of another team doing something like that, it's the Patriots. You know, the way they're coached, the way they play, the way they never give up.
And Tom Brady, let's be honest.
You know,
Gabriel,
well,
the wide receiver for them, the clip saying, yeah, but they have Tom Brady. Like, even they know sort of the scary monster that is Tom Brady.
Right.
Like, it's never over. You can stab him, and he's going to sit back up like the Undertaker and come back to fight you again.
Let me know when I get to take my victory lap from my boy James White. Can we get that in there at all?
I mean, 20 points scored?
Everything that Andy said about Brady, you know, I don't think we're breaking any new ground. But there were people, and it wasn't just fan talk. There were legitimate people that didn't feel James White should be on the 53-man roster.
You want to give an example?
Start the season.
Like Ben Volen, Boston Globe, would that be one?
That would be one. I wasn't necessarily going to call names out, but
well, he knows. Yeah. He's owned it.
And I didn't understand it then. Then I watched the whole season and see all the catches, all the plays the guy makes, and then on the biggest stage, he was as responsible as anybody. As responsible as anybody.
Well, he was
including
the player
Tom Brady.
Of the game. From start to finish, he was the best Patriot on the field. Maybe Trey Flowers
could make that claim as well.
And
he upped his game because we've always talked, he gets the ball in his hand in space, he makes people miss. He's always been able to do that. But in this one, he made people miss in close proximity.
As a runner.
He had to power through people and at least two occasions to get in.
Had a nose for the goal line. And that's the one thing we've always questioned is him as a runner to sort of get the yards that are needed, put the head down and get what's there. And he did that and ultimately did that on the final play of an overtime Super Bowl.
And it's just funny that you go the whole season without a rushing touchdown and you get two in the Super Bowl. And I was glad to see him come through on that stage
then,
just to shut
everybody
up. And
not that he had to show anyone, but there were still people who, you know, oh, maybe he's not the greatest ever. I think Tom Brady has shoved it down people's throats now that if you don't think I'm the greatest ever, then I can't help you.
And he was sort of symbolic of the team as a whole. He was part of the problem. He was part of the reason you were down that pick six. He was missing open receivers. He was being affected by the pass rush. He was a little jittery, a little bouncy back there. But then again, with the game on the line, what was he, 21 of 27 in the fourth quarter? You get into overtime, and it's boom, 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 right down the field. And if you watch some of those throws, as Paul said, they weren't wide open. No. He's making throws to the sidelines, deep outs, to Amendola and to Hogan.
Malcolm Mitchell.
You know, fourth down plays, third down plays that are key plays, and he was just on the money.
You mentioned all those names, and that's another thing I loved about this win is that everybody contributed. Every one of those wide receivers, Mitchell, Hogan, Amendola, you know, who got healthy for the playoffs, they needed every one of them to pull this thing.
One of the crazier catches. He went through a funk there because all the other guys had
overall,
to contribute.
That catch was amazing, but overall, I thought it was a pretty quiet night for him. But you might not win the game if he doesn't make that play. That was just incredible.
And then you flip it to the defensive side, and again, there were hiccups. There were guys wide open at times down the field. There were, you know, catch and runs where Harmon's getting juked out. But when they needed plays, you know, Dante Hightower, the strip sack,
the pressure
changes it.
The pressure
Trey Flowers, you know, I see him getting these endorsement deals out of it because of his name and Valentine's Day. But he is becoming, over the second half of the season, a breakout star for this defense, and he showed up on the biggest stage.
Absolutely. Well, all I can say is, you know, what Bill Belichick said, no days off.
Today's show is brought to you in part by W.B. Mason, the official office supplier of the New England Patriots. Who but W.B. Mason? Fisher Plows, a whole new way to attack winter. And also brought to you in part by AT&T. AT&T, mobilizing your world.
This final week of From the Heart, no matchup to look at, so we look at the offseason. As Bill Belichick said, the Patriots are 5 weeks behind the rest of the NFL. The team has more than a dozen key free agents. They also have $60 million in cap space to work with, but I'm going to focus on one guy. The priority, in my opinion, Dante Hightower, your Pro Bowl linebacker. We all saw the strip sack that changed the Super Bowl. A couple years ago, we all saw the tackle that changed the Super Bowl. He is the key in the middle of that defense. You traded Chandler Jones. You traded Jamie Collins. Now you have to pay Dante Hightower. It may take the franchise tag to get it going, or it could just be $50-plus million, but keep 54 in New England.
Well, as Andy pointed out, a lot of things going on this offseason, and the Patriots are a little bit behind to start, but obviously for a good reason. A lot of interesting developments during Super Bowl week, and one of them involved Jimmy Garoppolo. All of a sudden, it looks like there may be a bidding war for his services next year, and I think Bill Belichick needs to take advantage of that. The Cleveland Browns had beat writers basically camped out with Jimmy the whole week. They spent all 3 days of access just talking to Garoppolo. That's one team that he could go to. San Francisco was another, and this one is a little bit interesting to me. Chicago with Ryan Pace, an Eastern Illinois grad, obviously very familiar with Garoppolo. All three of these teams could be in the running for Garoppolo. I say you just get it out there and actively pursue this at the combine and see who will pay you the most for Garoppolo next year.
Trash Talk, brought to you by Waste Management. Remodeling or just have clutter to get rid of? Waste Management's new Baxter dumpster in a bag can take it on. Visit thebaxter.com for more info.
One final trash talk of the season. It's going to be a friendly one. Paul Perillo, the Patriots have a lot to do this offseason, but they have the money, the trade possibilities to get it done. Do they keep the band together, and what are the priorities beyond maybe a Garoppolo trade and a Hightower signing?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a good amount of those free agents probably leave. I don't think you necessarily have to keep everybody, and you have the money to do whatever you want. So that's the flexibility that you always desire.
I think it's interesting because it seems like they have kind of one decision to make in a lot of different areas. You know, LeGarrette Blount, do you bring him back? Probably. I think he'll probably want to come back. I don't think 30-year-old running backs coming off 300 carries get big money. I think his home is in New England. It's probably doable. You know, you look at the defensive backs. Can you get one of them back? Probably not. I actually think Harmon and Logan Ryan are both going to
test free agency
with you on that. And be gone. But you look at the defensive line, I think Alan Branch would fall into the, we can probably get him back. He wants to be back coming off a great year. Defensive end, to me, is the spot you just talked about. I think you need to upgrade the depth at defensive end, whether it be through the draft with a relatively high draft pick or through free agency, because Jabal Sheard, I think, is probably going to leave. Chris Long may be back if he wants to, may retire. You know, he may be happy going out on top with his first taste of the postseason being a successful one. I think that's a position. Ninkovich is back, but getting older, slowing down. I think you could look at speed at defensive end and linebacker as sort of a focus of either your money or your draft picks.
Yeah, more players like Trey Flowers.
That,
you know, and I agree with you on the athleticism there and linebacker depth. I mean, we're talking about Hightower, and you, I think, rightly pointed him as the priority free agent. Well, you better get him back because you really don't have any other linebackers.
And the two elephants in the room, though, for me, that could make this a more difficult offseason are restricted free agent Malcolm Butler.
Yeah.
What does he do? Does he sort of push the point? Does he want a contract? Would he play on the high tender, that first-round tender that they're likely to give him? Or is he looking to cash in and get his? And then on the other side of the ball, the man who was partying without contributing in the Super Bowl, Rob Gronkowski. What is he looking to do with his contract? Is he looking to play it out? Because I still think it's a good contract for the team if he is. But if Butler and Gronk push it, to me, that adds some disruption to the offseason.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It could be a problem. I'm not as worried about Butler, but you're right to have it on the table because you don't know how he's going to react.
The scary part for the rest of the league is they return their coaching staff. They have $60 million in the top 10 for most cap space. Only team in the top 10 that made, the playoffs previously. They have a trophy. They're going to have draft picks. They have options throughout the offseason. The Patriots are good, and they're already the favorite for the Super Bowl next year.
Tonight's show is brought to you in part by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. Also brought to you in part by Pepsi, official soft drink of the New England Patriots. Around the NFL is brought to you by Nissan.
Was it the greatest Super Bowl ever played? It's hard to make that claim when one team falls behind by 25 points, so no. But was it the most amazing Super Bowl ever? From either a Patriots or objective viewpoint, hard not to make that claim. Falcons fans might be in a state of disbelief, denial, or worse, but the rest of us, yeah, we're in a state of amazement. And for sure, this was the most historic Super Bowl to date. How else can we describe a game that set 27 records, tied 7 more, and was the first overtime game in Super Bowl history. For Patriots fans, the fact that we were taken to the depths of depression made the joy of winning that much more appreciated. It's sort of that yin-yang thing. You can't have hot without cold, love without hate, and dare I say, elation without deflation. What a game. Well, guys, it was a hell of a season, capped off by, you know, one of the most historic, if not the most historic game ever. But so many things led up to the Super Bowl all season.
For me, when you think back to the beginning of the year, no Brady. Garoppolo comes in and gets the job done for a game and then a couple quarters. But I'll remember Brissett, that bootleg touchdown against the Texans. You win on Thursday night. You shouldn't win that game. The play itself probably shouldn't work. Malcolm Mitchell's blocking downfield. Brissett's not really a runner, and he gets in. To me, that was sort of symbolic of how they kind of duct-taped it all together for a month.
And then him bringing the ball over to Belichick.
Yep.
But the moments,
and shutting them out.
No question.
Oh, yeah. But so many moments. And even, it's funny, those first four games seem like they were in another season.
Exactly.
It was so long ago now. But the very first game, in Garoppolo's first drive, the touchdown pass to Hogan, where I think he audibled out of something. I'm not exactly sure what he did, but it seemed to me that they saw the coverage, and they were all on the same page. First drive of the game, first start of his career, and he hits Hogan for a touchdown. That, to me, was unbelievable, just the poise that I thought Garoppolo had. And by the way, he's going to benefit from a play like that because he's going to end up somewhere making a lot of money.
Even the second game Garoppolo played, he couldn't play a more perfect game.
He was
perfect against
Miami.
He was executing this offense like, you know, nobody's
better
business.
Than Brady, I dare
well,
say.
Well, I don't know about that, but it was pretty amazing. And then one of the things that I remember a little bit further down in Buffalo, the first time we saw Hogan go deep, and I said to myself, okay, this guy's going to be able to to help this team this year. He's going to be able to do some things. I thought that's something that stuck out to me.
Yeah, I think Hogan was a surprise. We thought he'd contribute. He was brought in for a key role. He's the highest paid receiver when you bring him in from Buffalo. But the way he did it to tie for the NFL lead in yards per reception and the big plays and, you know, starting to show that ability to get behind people, I didn't know that was going to be a part of his game necessarily when he arrived here. But I would, you know, talking about month by month, to me the second month was Cleveland, Tom Brady returns.
Coming back. Yeah.
You know, how much time do we spend all summer about the reps he needs and he can't be rusty and what does he need to be ready and can he possibly hit the ground rolling? Yes, he can. And that was obvious from the very first minute he stepped on the field straight on through.
Well, it helped that they had a homecoming opponent that week.
That is true. Speaking of Cleveland, we can't underestimate the moment of shipping off Jamie Collins to Cleveland. I think, you know, as a football player, we know he's talented. He might have been the best defensive player, pure athlete on this team. But we don't know what would have happened had he stayed on. And Bill Belichick must have had some inkling that it wasn't going to be good.
Well, that moment to me was summed up in Bill saying, in my professional opinion, the Patriots are better without Jamie Collins moving forward. And
can't argue with
that,
right?
You had the number one scoring defense and you won the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. And I think you talk about the evolution of the defense, how it got better as the season went on.
I'm going to surprise you with one of the moments that I remember, because I've been so critical of LeGarrette Blount all year and, you know, really, you know, 18 touchdowns, neat, as they like to say. But just the corny little thing with the militia and taking the pictures and in the celebrations, you know, after all the touchdowns, and there were so many of them. Those kinds of things you just can't. If you thought about that and orchestrated it beforehand, it wouldn't come off like that. Yeah. But he genuinely, in that whole running back group, and Andy and I talk about this all the time, the genuine excitement that they have for each other every time someone does something. And the first guy that I remember when that Super Bowl ended was LeGarrette Blount sprinting down the sideline.
Yeah.
29 was sprinting down the sideline to get to the end zone when James White scored. So that kind of was a neat moment.
On a day when, interestingly, the guy who set the touchdown record for the Patriots during the season and was the guy with the nose for the end zone during the year was irrelevant, was actually a detractor.
A decoy
from the offense.
On the first down.
Giving
play.
The ball away and allowing them to score. So that unity is no question. And talking about the defense and sort of the highlight images, Hightower had a few in the Super Bowl earlier in the year, the safety. But you had to pull off a miracle in the Super Bowl. And to me, those are the images, because how many guys could you include in those moments, whether it's James White, Dante Hightower, Tom Brady, you know, just guys making
Trey Flowers, Danny Amendola,
Alan Branch recovers. You know, a fumble's only good if you recover it. If you don't recover it, it's sort of a useless play.
You a football coach?
A little bit. Yeah. I'm a philosopher.
Yep.
Putnam Investments is a proud partner of the New England Patriots, pursuing performance excellence through the power of teamwork.
Here's the last set of questions of the year that you sent us here at PFW. This first one comes from Robert Miles, and he says, stay with me because I'm going to use nicknames for these catches, but which do you think was the best? Was it the helmet catch against the Giants, the sideline catch against the Giants, the juggling catch against the Seahawks, Julio's catch on the sideline, or Edelman's catch off the guy's leg?
Well, really, I break them up into two categories. There's sort of the lucky catches and then the great catches. If we're just going to go pure skill, beauty, I think the Julio Jones catch was the best I've seen. The way he went up strong with the hands to get the ball, but then the toe tapping with the feet, you saw one of the best receivers of his generation making a great catch on the biggest stage. If you're going to go with the luck sort of catches, then I think it's Tyree. I still don't know how you catch a ball like that. And then if you sort of spread the two, I think it's Edelman. Because as he said, I think he put it at 70-30, 70% luck, 30% skill. Because he saw the ball. If you watch that replay, he saw it and dove in at it. But then caught it with his backhand and needed a guy's leg to catch it.
And had to go in between two guys' guy's legs.
So that's where the luck comes in and some skill. But pure skill, it's Julio Jones.
All right. Jeremy Hill writes in, am I crazy? Or would it be a good trade for New England to package Garoppolo and Gronk to Cleveland for picks number 1 and 12, assuming Cleveland would go for it, of course?
Jeremy Hill has a lot of time on his hands with the Bengals.
Yes.
Making trades in his division. I think that's asking a little bit too much. The number 1 and number 12, I'm not sure you could get first-round picks for either one of those guys, and now you're going to get two high picks for those two players. Obviously, Gronk has all the talent in the world, but the back injury is huge. He's getting a little bit up there in years now, too. A lot of wear and tear. And Garoppolo, we talked about it a little bit earlier in the show. He had that great start, but 1.5 starts And now you're just going to have to give a guy $60, $70 million. You're going to have to give him a Brock Osweiler contract.
But no one's going to trade the first pick and the 12th pick for either of those guys. Look at the Jimmy Graham trade. Seattle had to send a first-round pick and a starting player, a starting center.
I don't want Gronk
for Jimmy Graham. It's not going
to
happen.
Anyway.
It's a dream. I think Bill might take it, by the way.
Oh, I think Bill would be all over it.
Because then he's picking 1, 12, and 32. He's the Super Bowl champion with $60 million and three first-round
from
picks.
From the Patriots side, I would definitely do that deal.
Karen Drake writes in, do you think it's time to start looking for a replacement for Gostkowski? Another missed PAT in the Super Bowl, which could have lost the game.
Yeah, it was a terrible year for him, and it ended where it could have cost them the season. For the second year in a row, he could have been the discussion of why you lost, just like the miss in Denver. I think they're going to probably bring in a young kicker. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they drafted a guy in the 6th, 7th round. He comes in camp. Maybe Gostkowski still wins the job, but that guy's on the practice squad. But I think there will be some preparation. What happens if one bad year turns into two?
And I'll even say, once he got settled down there at the end of the year, he started making the kicks. Didn't you still think that he was sort of spraying a lot of them to the right?
Yeah, looks so like me golfing.
He's fighting it.
Robbie Grady says, will Bennett be in a Patriots uniform next year, or has he just put himself out of consideration by being so vocal about wanting more money?
Well, I don't necessarily think the vocal part of that is the problem. He wants more money. That's the problem. And I don't blame him, and he's a free agent. You know, there's very short careers in that league, and you got to get yours when you can. He has his title, and he said exactly what everybody always says. You go to New England, win a championship, and put yourself in the situation where you can cash in. I don't blame him. I don't think there's anything wrong with that mentality, but I'd be surprised if he's back.
And he was honest. You know,
he was dead honest.
In the immediacy of the Super Bowl, people overpay for Super Bowl champions. He's a Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, I think it's time to draft a young tight end. Anyway.
Yeah, I'd be stunned if they didn't.
I agree.
All right, well, that's the questions, and that's it for PFW for this season. Thanks, everyone, for watching, and we'll see you next year.
One more.